The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, a fabulous story in connection with the visit by American pop band Maroon 5, who are in Tel Aviv for two sellout concerts in the Tel Aviv Yarkon Park. Adam Levine is the front man of Maroon 5, quite a public figure.
Yeah, I'm a huge
carefully
fan.
Carefully worded description of the fact that his father is Jewish, and lots of footage of Maroon 5, Adam Levine, touring around Israel over the weekend ahead of their concerts. One was last night and the second will be tonight. But here is the really fantastic story about their visit to Tel Aviv. And it involves being in the right place at the right time. Adam Levine comes out of his bedroom on the Tel Aviv beachfront and stands on the balcony and notices on the beachfront a young singer-songwriter, an unknown Tel Aviv musician, busking on the beachfront. And he was so taken with her performance that he recorded it and he loaded it up to his Instagram, which has a small 14 million following. The end of that story, or the middle of that story, I don't know where the story is going to end.
I was going to say, we don't know the end of the story yet.
The current stage of the story is that Coral Bismuth has become a name and appeared on stage last night with Maroon 5. What a story.
What a story. I think that is incredible. I love those stories just because they're so human. You know, that's the one thing that I've noticed. I noticed it when Prince William visited Tel Aviv. We see it very often when a lot of these superstars come to Israel, that they connect with the people of Tel Aviv and the people of Israel quite authentically. And you see it more there than you see it almost anywhere else in the world when they go on these world tours. I'm not quite sure what it is. Maybe Israelis are just, you know, unafraid. They connect. They, you know, they don't treat people as these superstars. They treat them as people. So I don't know what it is, but it really is something that I've noticed along the way. And what a fantastic story.
Definitely unafraid, but in this case, in Coral's case, I mean, I don't think she even realized that she had been discovered until she saw it on Instagram, where Adam had loaded up this recording of her playing on the beachfront. What a story that is. Another story of being in the right place at the right time is Justice Khaled Kabuv, who yesterday became Israel's first Muslim appointee to the Supreme Court. He is one of the 15 judges who sit on the Supreme Court bench, and he will join Justice George Kara, who is also an Arab judge, but an Arab Christian judge. So Khaled Kabuv becomes the first Muslim appointee to Israel's Supreme Court. And I think it's just another indication of exactly what Israeli society is all about. By the way, we've had a few other Arab judges that have gone beforehand. They are not the first ones to sit on the bench of the Supreme Court. Salim Jubran, quite well-known, sat on the Supreme Court for some time, and he was considered to be the second Arab appointee after Abdul Rahman Zuabi held just a limited 9-month appointment back in 1999. So, yeah, I mean, these are lawyers who have really proven themselves, who've done a great job in their profession, and who, rightly so, have been appointed to the highest authority in Israel, being the bench of the Supreme Court.
Really just phenomenal, and what a great way to start the Israel Report with two great stories. The government yesterday survived two votes of confidence at the start of the Knesset's summer session. Has this stabilized the government's position now, Anthony?
Well, the government continues to be in a relatively unstable situation, because even though those two votes of no confidence, but they ultimately were defeated, so confidence was restored to some degree. One of the votes was brought by the Likud, was actually defeated by 52 votes to 61. In other words, the ruling coalition managed somehow to muster up 61 votes, even though they don't have control over 61 votes in the Knesset. And interestingly, the Ram party, which is formerly part of the coalition, but has frozen their participation in the coalition, did not participate in the vote at all. And instead, the Joint Arab List, which is not part of the coalition, on this occasion voted in favor of the coalition and therefore defeated the vote of no confidence with a majority of 61 votes. Later in the day, another vote of no confidence was brought by the Shas party. This one was more narrowly defeated by 56 votes to 52. And so for now, at least, the government survives, the coalition government survives. I think there was some celebrations, quiet celebrations, last night after these two votes were relatively easily defeated. Having said that, I mean, I think that these votes were largely symbolic because Israeli law does require that an alternative government be presented for a no confidence motion to actually succeed in the Knesset. And of course, there is no alternative government to be brought at this stage. But it does beg the question about who will be voting for whom moving forward. And the Joint Arab List have come out with a statement saying, don't expect us to continue to support the coalition going forward. We understand that I think tomorrow a vote will be brought to the Knesset in order to dissolve the Knesset. Now, if that vote succeeds, then we could well be going to elections. And the Joint Arab List has indicated that they probably will support the vote to dissolve the Knesset. Even with their support, though, I don't think that this vote can succeed. But certainly a lot of musical chairs being played in the Knesset at the moment, because interestingly, Idit Silman, who famously left the ruling coalition to leave them without a majority, did not participate yesterday in any of the votes. And it's not clear exactly which side of the fence she's going to be falling on when it comes to discussing and voting on the dissolution of the Knesset, which I think will be due tomorrow. So the summer session of the Knesset has started with a bang. Lots and lots of bills already having been introduced in the first session yesterday, in addition to these attempts to unseat the government. I think that the ruling coalition government yesterday would have breathed a sigh of relief that they managed to at least defeat these two motions, even though they were somewhat symbolic. But it still brings, I think, a little bit more confidence to their ability to work through the Knesset and to somehow have a functional Knesset in spite of the fact that they don't have the majority. But I think that tomorrow will be a critical moment when the vote on the dissolution of the Knesset will be held. And we will be watching that carefully to see how it goes.
Absolutely. It's can never really be confident about the strength of the Israeli government. It's just, I feel like it's working so well. Please, can they not break it and not talk about new elections? I just don't think we could cope with that emotionally.
Well, that was the comment by Prime Minister Naftali Bennett yesterday after those two votes were defeated, said that this reflects the will of the Israeli people, that they want this government to continue to operate. And I think he does have a point, because
I'm sure
I think
that
not only has the general public become a little tired of successive elections, but actually this government has been operating, has managed to appoint new judges, a new judge at least to the Supreme Court, has managed to appoint diplomats, has managed to pass a budget. There are things.
So it's interesting. Yeah, Anthony, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about many of my discussions that I had in Israel, and the one thing that I noticed now, and it's only on reflection now that I'm thinking about it, is that most of the discussions that I had were very, very rational discussions, in the sense that they were less emotional than they have been in the past. In other words, they would say, well, look, Bennett hasn't done this well, but he's really done that well, and this is working nicely, but this is a concern. And those are the sort of, they were within the realm of normal and rational, if I can use such a word, rather than times before with Netanyahu, where you had this incredibly strong and passionate support for him, but you also had equally strong and passionate hatred for him and for the government and for potentially the corruption that's been going on, you know, for all of these things. And
Are you trying to suggest that this rational discussion almost felt like you weren't in Israel? Is that what you're trying to say?
Maybe that was one of the problems with my trip, is just didn't feel like the Israel that I know and love. No, but it's only on reflection that I'm thinking about it, that there wasn't this incredibly emotive response to government.
I think don't be fooled for a moment.
Okay.
There is a lot of emotion that still surrounds everything that's going on. But I think with the benefit or the disadvantage of having been through all of those elections with a system that was effectively frozen because there were so many things that weren't functioning during that time because the government wasn't properly appointed. It was effectively a caretaker government. The Knesset wasn't functioning as it should be. There was so much that was frozen in the Israeli political system that people said at some point, you know, we can set aside our political differences.
And just get on with
it. We need to have an administration that functions. We need to be able to pass a budget. We need to be able to appoint people to senior positions. We need to have an administration that just gets on with the daily work that is required to be done by the administration. We can talk separately about the emotive stuff, about the status of Jerusalem, about, you know, our attitude towards Russia, about foreign policy towards the United States, about, you know, these are all very emotional issues and emotive issues that we need to talk about, how to cope with terrorism, what, you know, how we should respond to Temple Mount discussions. You know, there's so many emotive things that we can talk about in Israel. And of course, there is a time and a place for all of that. And don't think for a moment that that has all been swept under the carpet and forgotten about. But I think in light of the lack of a functioning administration, people just wanted the practicalities to be taken care of. And then once we've got a functioning administration, we have the luxury to begin to get emotional again, to talk about the other issues, which are probably insoluble. I don't know if there's any solution for most of those, but we will continue to talk about those and be very emotional. And by the way, just when you look at the way in which the opposition is working, the Likud, they are still being driven by emotion. When you see how they get support from their followers, the way that they rile up the people in order to try to oppose what Bennett is doing, that is all very much emotionally based. And there is a fundamental issue with it because these emotions somehow have a tendency to get a little out of control, as I'm sure you've seen from time to time.
Just a little. Just a little bit. Yair says Bibi's making a comeback, and in brackets, hopefully. So you still have many, many Bibi supporters and Netanyahu supporters. Mm. And Carol Z saying, well, what about that woman of 65 who was sent the live bullet to Bennett? We were talking about that a little bit earlier on in the show. Gosh, hell hath no fury.
Exactly. And the emotional, emotive side has definitely not disappeared. It might just have been kind of parked for a moment, put on ice until we just can get, you know, administration functioning.
All right. Let's just talk about President Biden's visit to Israel. There seems to be some controversy around it.
As you would expect, because you know, President Biden's attitude towards Israel has some ambivalence associated with it. On one hand, he understands that the American administration needs to support Israel for 100 good reasons, but he himself is a little concerned, and we've seen that already in the way in which the administration has come out to say, don't approve construction and settlements before my visit, you know, don't antagonize this, don't spoil the visit in any way. But of course, now he's responded in his own inimitable way by saying that, you know, he would quite like to visit a hospital, the Al-Makased Hospital, which is the largest Palestinian medical center in East Jerusalem. Now, the act of visiting a hospital by an American president is entirely justifiable and seems to be benign in every sense, except for the fact, of course, that this is a hospital that's located in East Jerusalem and certainly reflects a divide between Israel's rights to the east side of Jerusalem. We have this ongoing discussion about the fact that to what extent Israel might have rights or might not have rights to keep East Jerusalem as part of a unified city of Jerusalem, which is the capital of Israel. And of course, we know that the Palestinian Authority and many others have laid claim to the east side of Jerusalem and wish to separate it away from Israel. And of course, that lay behind the decision by all of the international governments around the world not to locate their embassy in Jerusalem, because that would be seen to be some sort of a vindication of Israel's right to the unified city of Jerusalem. And here we come, of course, then President Trump decided, as we know, to relocate the American embassy into the city of Jerusalem, where it currently still is located. And in will come President Biden, probably towards the end of next month. And he would like to visit a hospital which reflects exactly the opposite, which it reflects divisiveness, reflects division, Israel's lack of right to that east side of Jerusalem. Of course, his visit would not be accompanied by any Israeli officials who would really regard this as some sort of a lack of recognition of Israeli sovereignty over that part of the city. And one might even argue that given that he is a guest of the Israeli government, that it might be a little rude to do something which would antagonize your guest, your hosts, when you come to visit their home. You know, when you go to someone's home, the last thing that you would that would be acceptable to do is to somehow take some sort of an action which would be regarded as an insult to the people who are kindly hosting you. And so this particular action, I think, is somewhat antagonistic. It will most certainly create some sort of a rumpus within the ruling coalition. Some people would turn up and say, why would we even tolerate having the US president come along and kick sand in our face in terms of our rights to sovereignty over that part of the city? But this seems to be the way in which President Biden is operating and wishes to do things. The story is far from over.
Indeed. It really is, and look, I'm not a massive Biden supporter in any way. I do try to be as balanced as possible, but not succeeding in any way. It is 8 o'clock. Antony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.